Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket podcast coverage of the TBT 2020. It's win or go home, and $1 million US is on the line, and the winner takes all. My co-host, Andrew Canyon, and I will be watching and breaking down every game from the tournament from an NBL and Australian perspective. Follow me on Twitter for NBL and TBT updates. That's at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. And follow Andrew too, at Andrew Canyon. That's Canyon, C-A-N-I-O-N. Are you in the business of buying a book? Try Booktopia. They have nearly 1,000 entries under the search basketball, but they have more than just sports books. They have everything and are based out of Sydney, Australia. Use the link in the description to help the podcast, if you'd be so kind. Also, in the spirit of helping the show, rate, review, and subscribe. Any combination of all three is much appreciated. But right now, let's jump into it.
All right, Andrew, let's jump in. Before we jump into today's play from the TBT, which was day four of the round of 16, let's look at some quick NBL news. Sek Henry, formerly of the Breakers, he won't be there anymore. He's not returning to the NBL. He's signed in Turkey. What do you think of him as a player? And he's not returning.
Yeah, I liked him as a player. I didn't expect him to be returning. I thought, you know, with talk of Scotty Hobson coming back, well, you're definitely going to take him. And two imports this year, so you need a big. So, yeah, no surprise. But he was a solid player.
Yeah. And really, what I liked about him most as well was happy to back up Hampton for a little bit of the season. I don't know how that went inside their camp, but, you know, sort of bided his time and was good about it and didn't say anything, and then kind of got his time towards late in the year. So got to commend him for that, being a pro to play behind him when he was clearly the better player.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, hopefully this is a reward for the efforts put in that year.
The other news, so sticking with New Zealand, Scotty Hobson is, they're looking like that's going to come back. That was on Liam Samaria overtime. And Ty Webster apparently is going to sign, the brother of Corey. Do you know, have you seen him play?
Really only at some of the international tournaments. Yeah, that's right. And look, he looks really handy. The Webster brothers obviously sorted it out in the backyard, didn't they? I'll be point and you be and you be shooting guard and keep everybody happy. He's handy.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't seen a lot of him, again, only in international play, but apparently he's and not just rumored, but, you know, quite concrete. And then I guess the third piece of NBL news, because it hasn't been a heck of a lot, was, did you see the Andrew Bogut in conversation with Lucy Zelich? Did you see the article? Get a chance to read it, maybe?
I did not. No, this is news to me, so you'll have to fill me in.
It's a nice little quote, and he talks about, you know, growing up and the struggles there and what he thinks of the NBL now and a few other things, and it's definitely worth your time. Two things from it, though. Firstly, it was only in written. When I saw a conversation with Andrew Bogut, I was like, oh, great, this will be a piece of audio or a sit-down filmed interview. Nope, it was just the question was written in bold and then the answer in text below it. I thought, that's a bit – I just thought it'd be nice if it was an option of the audio of the conversation, but nope.
Not really up with the times there, are they?
Well, that's what I thought. I just thought, gee, you wouldn't want someone who, you know, either – doesn't like reading, first of all, or yep, likes to ingest it otherwise, or people who need their glasses and don't have them, people who, you know, dyslexia, things like that. I thought, gee, you're preaching to a very small choir there. Because I was eager to just listen to it while I was doing the dishes or whatever, but had to read it, but nonetheless. But the big quote that came out of it that I thought was interesting was this one from Andrew Bogut, and he's talking about the decision to play in Perth during the grand final or not to play in their eventual withdrawal.
Yes.
And I quote, I think they had someone there playing that was diagnosed with COVID. There was no pushing for extra testing for us. And then he sort of, there's obviously important words before and after that, but that line got me there. I'll say it again. I think they had someone there playing that was diagnosed with COVID. Now, whether he means, you know, how they shared the Wildcats shared that flight with someone who was positive, I was like, oh, wow, don't tell me a Wildcat had turned a positive result. There's only been about three active cases of COVID in WA this whole pandemic.
Yeah, I don't know
what's going on.
I don't know where he's – this is classic Andrew Bogut, isn't it? Unsubstantiated claims.
Maybe not. I don't know, but I'm – because I know there was an issue around sort of – I believe the Kings were pushing for testing, but when it was divulged that the Wildcats had shared that plane with someone who was positive, and whether tests weren't coming. Now, who didn't give the testing? Did the Wildcats say, no, you're not testing our players? Did WA Health say, don't worry about it? Did the NBL say, we can't get access to tests, I'm sure it'll be fine? So there's a number of sort of, there's this sort of circle of control, or the duty, who's got the duty of care here? And it's a tough one to splice, and it opens up the book again on this chapter.
Really, we've been roundabout on this so many times, and all of a sudden, this is a brand new piece of information.
Doesn't ring true
for me.
Anyway, what can I say? I'll dig around and we'll see what we can come up with. But they're the only real NBL news today in the TBT. Just to summarize for everyone, it was day 4, round of 16. We had 2 games, Sideline Cancer and Team Challenge ALS, that Casper Ware was supposed to play for. He did not. We were talking about this last time, Andrew. You discovered that he wasn't on the profile. I discovered that he wasn't on the profile as of July 2nd, which was when teams started to arrive at the thing. Now, I haven't got any firm diagnosis either way of, did he test positive for COVID? Did he have something else? Was he not happy with his share of the pro? I've got no idea, but nonetheless, he didn't play. What do you think, Andrew?
And Marvell Harris was also going to be on this team
the
as
other
well,
one.
Wasn't he?
Former NBL player, yeah.
So the NBL representation is falling away. I think they're fearful of our analysis. I think that's really what's happening here.
But the other game, Men of Mackay and Boham's Army. I interrupted, Andrew. You were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say it's a disappointment that those NBL guys are not there, but we can
especially
only...
Casper Ware.
Yeah,
I was really looking forward to seeing if his shooting struggles were going to continue,
yep,
or maybe it was a NBL Will Weaver, Sydney Kings thing.
Yeah, disappointing though.
Very. Let's jump onto our overarching questions from day 4. You posed one to me in text earlier in the week. Let's start with that one.
So basically what I'm asking you is, this TBT is quite fun to watch and enjoyable. Almost, and it seems to be a bit more just love of the game attached to it.
Sure.
Is it a more enjoyable product than perhaps the NBA to watch? And is that a product of it being more relatable? So you've got almost to the point where you could somewhat imagine yourself in playing these games. I mean, you see the guy from Heard That, carrying a bit of extra kilos. And I think, there goes me, but for the grace of God. The NBA, absolutely, I'm never going to set foot on an NBA court.
No.
I just wonder, does that make an influence in your
it's
level
interesting.
Of enjoyment?
I mean, I think the thing that makes the NBA so watchable for me is its unrelatability. The fact that I know I am consuming a premium product. It's like when you go to very few food connoisseurs, or even myself, can tell the difference between Wagyu beef and your average rump steak or whatever, but just that knowledge of, I know I am consuming the best, the actual top of the talent is on the court in front of me. As far as the TBT goes, I definitely see a point about it being relatable. I think because the thing that I broke this question down to is, the NBA is not just one thing, There's the NBA watching it live. There's the NBA watching it on TV. There's the NBA regular season. There's the NBA fourth quarters. There's the NBA playoffs and finals. And I think, is the TBT more fun to watch than some of the dregs of the NBA regular season? Absolutely. Because some of those games, you can forget why you're even there. You can have two non-playoff teams. Even if you've got one playoff team, one not, you can forget the purpose. You never forget the purpose in the TBT. But as far as the NBA finals and playoffs, I think they probably trump this. But even the fourth quarter of a tight regular season game that matters in the NBA, they can be pretty special. So it has it in some cases. I just like that this thing is always working to a point. Every game, every play, with the Elam ending and even without it, that at the end of the game, it is of consequence. And that's most important for me. What do you think?
Well, perhaps it's maybe it's a function of the tournament structure of it all. It's
the style.
It's
it's
elimination. You're playing. It's a short term thing. You can't coast through the mid period of a season. You tune out a little bit. So everything matters. Maybe it is that. But I have to say, I do enjoy the fact that it all seems more, it seems close to me. And that's why
it's accessible. I mean, look,
like
we have the NBL
more than the
NBA.
We
have constant contact with guys in this TBT. We're close to Armored Athlete. They contact us. It's an accessible league, not just on the floor, but off it. Yeah, I see what you're saying. But you were talking about the NBL.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say that's why I actually enjoy the NBL more than the NBA, because it seems more relatable to me. Right. You know, I can get to a game, I can watch it, and it's right. It's realistic, you know, whereas like you say, the NBA is almost a league full of superheroes. It almost seems unreal in its high level of play.
I think also the style of play of this TBT, and I keep saying the TBT when I should just say TBT, but
it's like the ATM machine, don't worry.
Exactly. Good point. I think Shirley Strawn of the Skyhawks put it best. Like, ego is not a dirty word. These games play with a sense of it's me versus you. It's on the line. It's got a real, it's never nasty. We haven't seen any fights, but it's got that real basketball aggressive energy of I'm going to score on you. You know, I'm going to come back at you. It's got that sort of style of play, which is, I think, you know, really, really healthy and good.
Yeah.
Any other questions from day four of play?
Look, I've got a question that doesn't relate directly to the games themselves. It relates to some of the advertising and something I've heard more about around in basketball, and that's esports. Now, esports, and in terms of, you know, NBA 2K tournaments, you know,
I saw that advertising on
PlayStations and things like that. Is that something that you've ever delved into in any way?
No, in fact, well, kind of. I saw that there was Oceania tournament in the esports, and I did contact the kids who play in that team. They didn't get back to me, but I was hoping to have a Zoom call with all five of them and just seek to understand something very foreign to me. Competitive video games, the word itself is almost a misnomer, you know, competitive video games. I associate video games almost exclusively with relaxation and recreation, and the idea of making it highly competitive for money is not just $50 between friends or, you know, as a joke, but an actual league. I do find it a little bit difficult, but I can see the appeal.
Yeah, because it's a fully televised thing now, you know, and they used to get audiences going to stadiums to watch people play.
And it's Dota 2,
huge online
in South Korea, is hugely popular. You know, like one of the most populated and viewed sport, or quote unquote sporting events, is Dota 2. I don't know.
And I guess with the NBA, the 2K games.
You going?
Sorry, I spoke over you there. A bit of internet delay.
There you go.
The NBA 2K games, they're so accurate in terms of their simulation.
They are.
That they can replicate a real game. So it does make sense to me, but I've never gotten into it and I'm not sure I could either. Again, perhaps I'm out in the wrong demographic.
We'll watch a tournament and we'll see what we think. But no, I'm not. I can understand that at this point of life, there are some things that are for me and some things for other people. And I'm happy to leave it at that. Wish them all the best. Pat them on the butt and good luck out there. A question I had for you. Not tomorrow, but the day after, Overseas Elite are going to play Armored Athlete. That's the game of the tournament so far for us. We love both of those teams. We haven't seen Overseas Elite yet, but they did have DJ Kennedy. But that's my kind of question for you is, DJ Kennedy is not going to play. And I don't believe he's tested positive for COVID. I think there's been another reason why he's not in the tournament. Again, not known to me, but that was really disappointing because I was very, very eager to see DJ Kennedy play. Haven't seen him in 2 years.
Mr. TBT, as it seems to be. I mean, he comes with a huge reputation in the tournament.
It does bode well for Armored Athlete.
Yeah, look, I mean, I found it interesting that DJ Kennedy is such a weapon in this tournament because when he played in the NBL, I thought he was good, serviceable, but not outstanding. You know, he's a good all-round player. But there was nothing about him that struck fear in my heart. But the way they talk about him in this tournament, he seems to be the guy for that team.
Honestly, I think it's an issue of contact at the hoop. You see the way these games are played, the aggressiveness that both offense and defense is allowed to be played at, I can see why he'd be effective in this tournament. I mean, some of the contact, we'll talk about it when we do our notes on the two games, but some of the contact after scores, during scores that are either called or not called is unreal. Like they allow a lot. So I can see where in this tournament, DJ Kennedy would sway a lot of shots, being a little bit smaller, making a little bit more body contact, but getting away with it. I mean, when you say DJ Kennedy in the NBL, I went back and had a look at this, and this is a long while ago, and I did the best I could, but I just thought I wanted to see what DJ Kennedy did in wins for Melbourne and what he did in losses for Melbourne. And this is the split.
Okay.
So in wins, he played in 20 wins, although that can't be right. Oh, he missed games with that whiplash, didn't he? So I've got, he played 31 games in total, so he missed a couple. Anyway, in the wins, there were 20 wins, of which he started 17 of them, 31 minutes per game in those wins, 44% from the field, 8.5 rebounds, 15 points per game. Then I look at the losses. He played in 11 losses. He started 9 of those losses, 27 minutes. So, you know, down 4 or 5 minutes, 44%, same shooting split. Rebounds almost halved, 5.4. So, you know, almost half, a little bit over. And then 9 points per game, again, just a little bit under half. So I could kind of see how DJ Kennedy goes. Melbourne kind of went a little bit. And the splits were very similar across his last year in Turkey. That same thing where 15-9 in wins, and then sort of the, you know, 5-10 or a bit less in the losses. Not as bold as in the NBL. But I just thought that was interesting. Like, I thought Melbourne kind of gave up on him a little early. I mean, they obviously got enticed by Casey Prather and his resume, but imagine if the team was Trimble, DJ Kennedy, and Long going into last year. Yep. I would have been way more comfortable with that. And complementing them with Barlow, or not necessarily Barlow, but, you know, McCarron and Ely and Golding. I think if they could do that again, they would. What do you think?
Well, you're the numbers guy. I lean on you for the statistical analysis.
Right.
But I'd be interested in his usage rate, because my memory of DJ Kennedy is that he was pretty efficient.
Next time.
If he was a bit of a glue guy, you know?
I just loved his versatility. Like, he is a jackknife, master of all trade. Jack of all trades, master of none. But I kind of like that in a basketball court, and especially in the NBL. Small fours, you can kind of protect the rim a bit, defend. The outside shot wasn't great, though, was it? Like, if you're a smaller four, you got to shoot from the outside. And he never quite found the touch, but was injured, did have that neck thing. I still feel Melbourne went off him too soon.
I expected him to come back. I was surprised that they didn't. But yeah, I guess the Prather thing, in hindsight's 2020, right? If you had your time over again, what would you do?
But he's not playing.
I'm not even sure Casey Prather's going to be back this year. Who knows?
Dean Vickerman was in an interview, and he definitely left the door open to, like, well, if he doesn't pass the health exam, we'll re-examine it. So I was like, oh, okay. Kind of just putting a little wedge in the back door. Makes sense. DJ Kennedy's not playing in this tournament. First time he hasn't played since this thing started, or the last 4 years that they've won it. So, you know, real disappointment, because this, as you said, like, this is his domain, and it'll be sad not to see him in it.
It will be.
Any other questions, Andrew, or do you want to jump into notes?
No, let's jump into the games.
Okay, let's do it. Game one was Team Challenge ALS and Sideline Cancer. How'd you see it, Andrew?
This was a battle of the point guards, wasn't it? It was your your favorite position in this tournament, the 6'2" strong point guard who can do
scoring
a bit of everything.
Point guards,
You had Keane playing for Sideline Cancer, and you had Rice playing for Challenge ALS, and they were just Tyrese. Back and forth. It was
a battle.
And I really enjoyed it, because you could see they were taking it personally. One would come down, score straight up the other end. The other guy would do something. I really enjoyed it as a battle in the context of the game.
No Casper Ware put a damper on this. We said at the top of the program, I really felt like he would have been the difference as well. Even if he'd played like he did at Sydney and shot as poorly as he did, I still think the team Challenge ALS, they missed a point guard to kind of control things. I wasn't sold on Tyrese Rice. But did you see the early smack talk between Marcus Keane and the guy, Stefan Branch, the sort of bigger, longer guy who wasn't the other point guard but played a lot of defense on him? That was fun to watch. your favorite, Diamond Stone, didn't play in this game either, out injured.
Do you know the story on that?
He hurt his foot in the last game.
Oh, okay. So it was.
Yeah, nothing, no COVID, nothing like that. No. He literally turned an ankle in the last game and sat this one out, which is a bummer. This was the game. There was only one white guy out on the floor. Do you remember him?
What was his? Well, no, I don't. What was his name? Remind me.
Well, I thought his name was Thor. I thought it was Thor McGlynn. It's not. His name is Four, like the numeral, F-O-U-R, Four McGlynn.
He didn't stand out. It's a very white guy name, isn't it?
He hit A3, got headhunted twice on defense, and then it was back to the bench. But Four, his name is F-O-U-R. I think it was George Costanza who wanted to name his kid Seven in a Seinfeld episode. I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan or not.
Well, you're testing my memory there.
And then the other funny name out there was the head coach of Team Challenge ALS. His name was Charlie Parker, as in the famous saxophone player. So you had two funny names out there. Why do you think Sideline Cans got the win, Andrew?
Look, I think it was you touched on it. I think it's the loss of Casper Ware from Challenge ALS. They needed another 3-point threat and scoring threat, and they were missing that. And I think if you slot Casper Ware into that lineup, it changes everything.
The other guy, I thought, obviously Marcus Keane had a great game. The other guy was the big guy who stepped up in the absence of Diamond Stone, Eric Thompson, 27 years old, plays in Israel, 6'8", 109 kilos. In Israel, scores 12 points per game, 9 rebounds. And is a free agent, just quietly, NBL people and fans. He stepped up big. Who did you prefer, Diamond Stone in game one or this guy?
Yeah, I know. I was all in on Diamond Stone, wasn't I? And then he steps up. I had a sequence written down here. I've wrote, he's starting to assert himself inside, and then he followed up with a block, and then there was an offensive tip. Yeah, and then you got a two and one.
I had two and ones in a row after a ramrod rim run from a pick and roll, which I thought was nice alliteration. He was either the best or second best player on the floor to Marcus Keane.
Yeah, I think, so Diamond, my man Diamond's got his work cut out to get back into the rotation.
Or has to take a minutes hit. That's going to be an interesting thing. Do you think they're better with or without Diamond? We've seen them play two games.
But
I kind of like the way they played this game. I felt Diamond Stone, like they hit from the outside in game one, but they didn't have this level of like, they went up, they went down, they had to struggle through a good team. Felt like what they had on the floor was their best.
Yeah, okay.
The other one, Remy Abel, Bo Jackson's cousin. Bo, everybody knows Bo, that Bo.
Bo knows basketball. Game.
Bo knows basketball.
Do you remember that?
He had a couple of big threes. We'll pick up here in the fourth. I was keeping a tab of Marcus Keane because he's been one of the players of the tournament. So in the fourth quarter, he hit a two-pointer to go ahead, another two-pointer, so only 4 points for the quarter, but had four assists because he was under huge pressure. Double teams, hard shows, hedges, double, all that sort of stuff. But still had four assists for a two, a three, and a three. So adding that all up, 3, 6, 8, 10, 14 points for the team for the quarter. Bit of the back of envelope maths, but, and I don't know. I think that would have been most. He would have had a hand in either all or most of the points for Sideline Cancer in the fourth quarter. Again, a great game from him.
It was a fantastic game. He was impressive. And that was going to be one of the questions that I was going to ask you coming out of this game. If you're an NBL GM and you're looking for a point guard and you've got Keane and Rice on the board, who have you got? Oh, is it an easy choice?
I didn't like Rice. Yeah, very easy. I like Keane. Really? Rice had this one-legged three-point attempt with 16 seconds left on the shot clock in the fourth quarter just before the Elam. And I was like, I didn't. I thought Keane was just that much quicker with the ball and just caused that much more separation. Why? You preferred Rice?
Well, I didn't prefer him, but I was higher on him than you were, obviously. I liked his court vision. He seemed to find open guys in the Machado sort of, not the same level of quality as Machado, but the way that he was finding guys for the shots. I thought he was pretty handy. Okay.
I might have to rewatch it. I'm not going to, but no, I didn't see it that way. I just thought Keane just opened up the game for himself and others, just being such a scoring threat. And I never thought he was selfish either. That was the other thing. He wasn't just jacking it. I had a question for you, Andrew. We talked about on last time's episode about how the Elam ending can be sometimes a bit clumsy coming in at the 4 minute mark. Did you like it in this game? Sideline Cancer had the ball with just over 4 minutes left. They held the ball, waited when it got under 4 minutes, took the timeout. Scores at that point were 66-63. So they were up by three. They held it, waited to enact the Elam ending, and then they had like a free run at the, well, they had an attack at the basket with the target set at what, 74?
Yep.
That made a lot of sense, don't you think?
Yeah, that was the right way to play it out at that point. You know, it was a good approach. I didn't really have a criticism of it in that regard.
And I kind of liked it as he was holding the ball, you know, waiting to enact the Elam ending. It had a sense of drama to it. It wasn't as clumsy as it has been in the past.
No, sure. It wasn't.
Any other notes from this one, Andrew?
Look, I've got to give you this one because I worked on this material all afternoon.
Let's do it.
Rice, you're saying you weren't a fan, but I just want to point out he could get to the rim at any time. He got a block on one defensive play. He created the buzzer beating three. And I wrote down after that Rice is serving it up hot.
Okay.
There you go. I'm here all week.
Happy to move on to game two.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, we've had the entree. Let's go to the main course. Game two. No, this was far from the main course. I thought this was, I had a hard time with this game. Did you?
I tried really hard. I tried to like get my underdog sort of motivation happening. I was barracking for the Meta Mackie. I can never get that right.
It's Mackie.
Mackie. But really, for me, the highlight of this game, for all the wrong reasons, was the E&J family spotlight.
Oh, what was that? I must have missed it.
And that was, you probably did because the game was not that exciting. It was they interviewed the Syracuse head coach.
You enjoyed that?
No, I didn't.
I couldn't stand it. I'm not a fan.
It was terrible. And I should clarify my notes. That was not the E&J family spotlight. The E&J family spotlight was the Robbie Hummel interview, and I liked him.
Robbie Hummel.
Hummel, oh, of sorry. Course. Yeah. Yes. No. I liked him. Yeah. He seemed a good dude. But getting back to the coach, Boeheim.
Oh, you got plenty of screen time.
Jesus. Talk about make America great again. Wow.
No. I was like, okay, I think it probably went for about half of the third quarter.
Yeah.
He just spoke on and on and on. And not that there was a lot of action over the top, but yeah, I mean, Jim Boeheim may mean a lot to people in the Syracuse area, but I know who he is. I've heard the name, but I'm sorry. He's not at the game. He's probably not even watching. Not terribly interested. But just to go back, Meta Mackie, Boeheim's army getting up in this one. But yeah, you were saying, Andrew.
Yeah, I have to finish my loop on this coach because I'm so fired up about it. Look, apparently this guy's a coach, some legendary coach. His advice to the team as they asked him, what would you do if you were coaching this team?
Keep driving it?
Keep driving and make shots. I mean, give me a break. Come on.
Yeah, I heard that. You know, coach, I think I may have muted it after that. I really do. Or just totally muted myself to it. That's the sort of. But having said that, you do those two things, you're on top of the basketball world.
You can do it.
So. Yeah, no, you're very right. That was funny.
And then they gave him a softball. They were talking about COVID, and they said, you know, what are you going to do?
Oh, would you wear a mask? Yeah.
And
he said no.
No. Now, mister, this is your chance to have an influence, a positive influence on society at this point. Thousands of people are watching this. And you say no, I'll stand 6 feet away and I've got a loud voice. Not good enough.
I mean, when I hear loud voice, that just means you're propelling your phlegm, your coliform. That's even worse. Yeah. So I couldn't. Yeah, actually, you're very right. I couldn't believe it when I heard that. But anyway, all power to him.
Sorry, sorry. I almost Corey Homicide Williams on there. I was getting so fired up.
It was a rant, well worth it. The universities, you made a point of this. The uniforms of Meta Mackey. You made a comment on the last game that they were terrible, that champagne gold color. They changed them up for the better. Yep. I think we can both agree on that. I went to a white design. Better. I want to throw a name at you from this game, from Meta Mackey. Isaac Haas, 7'3", probably 100, 500 kilograms. Thoughts? Good player, bad player, and in this game?
I couldn't keep my eyes off him. Maybe massive. Half the reason for that was that he was filling half the court.
Yeah.
Just a couple of tree trunks for legs. I made a note here. I said, Haas, he's 7'3", but not a lob threat. And
good point. He's not, is he, at all?
But frustrating. Frustrating. The ball not clumsy, like a tennis ball not in clumsy, his hand.
But slow.
Just clunky. Maybe.
Yeah. Like an old Holden in a snowbank. It's just slow to get moving.
And you could see the double. They were throwing doubles at him. And all he needed to do was hold the ball up high and find the open man.
He lost
man.
The ball in a double team in the post like two or three times. Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. He'd try and put a dribble spin move onto it and just end up cleaning guys up.
One guy, Raymond took a forearm to the face. That would have hurt. I think this game, we saw a dynamic of the tournament aspect come into this one for me. Meta Mackey had played. They had a little bit of a lather up like a racehorse. They came out strong. They ended up going down 69-76, but I still felt like this wasn't a representation of how good they were. I think they were kind of come off a game. They're in their motion a little bit. This was Boeheim's Army first performance. They were slow to start, but were you ever in doubt of the result?
Never in doubt with the result. No. And every time, all that needed to happen was for Boeheim's Army, if they attacked the rim, they would get a layup or a really good shot. It was just obvious. And they go through phases where they'd stop doing that, they'd settle for jump shots, and that would give the Meta Mackey just a bit of a sniff. But then they'd realize, Boeheim's would realize that, they'd attack the rim again and put it out of doubt. And Devin, got to give a shout out to Eric Devendorf. The man has not aged since I saw
him
playing for the Tigers all that time ago.
I looked him up, right? Devendorf obviously last played in the New Zealand League in 2016, 33 years old, which is young enough to kind of still be knocking about. But the play that made me think he was such a good player, and that I think set up this game to just be a wash thereafter, was in the second quarter. Scores were tied at 19. Boeheim's Army went on an 11-2 run, of which Devendorf was a big part of. He had 2, 4, 6 points and an assist to a 3. So had 9 of these 11 points to totally change the momentum. And just after that, Meta Mackey were always kind of that step slower, trying to catch up, but it was just never going to happen. He was terrific. How's he not still around?
I don't understand. It seemed like he'd lost nothing. He was still quick. Still killer jump shot.
And finishing at the basket.
He hit one over Haas.
A couple where he'd like to initiate the contact, throw it up with left or right hand and put a bit of English on it. He was like really like classy and kind of like Jason Williams, white chocolate, and that's, Mike Bibby.
That's exactly who I thought. I
was more of a scoring. Jason Williams, meets Mike Bibby scoring. I just thought he was, he was a joy to watch. Really fun. I think endurance might be an issue for him. He sat out long stretches. That's the issue for this team going forward. They looked like a good team when he was on the floor. I've got here in my notes, game feels plodding, overthought out, worst quarter of play since the round of 24. Wouldn't you agree? I just felt this game, like you had coaches, it was slow paced, unlike the others. This was not attractive.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. The shooting wasn't there. It just wasn't an enjoyable fun game to watch in that sense. It maintained my interest. I did stick with it, but it didn't really get me fired up at any point.
The end score was 69 to 76. And I think that's embellished because most of these points came when the clock was stopped. We saw a lot of free throws for this tournament. We saw, comparative to the other play, a lot of free throws and a lot of foul calls.
Yeah, they won it from the line, basically. It was just and they were hitting them.
It ended on a foul shot. Credit to them. The least ceremonious Elam ending.
Yeah. You may well just play a normal game the way it was going in that one, just foul upon foul. There was something I wanted to ask you about in the play of this game. Was when Haas spun in and created that offensive foul on the double team, and there was a bit of consternation and they went to the replay and that kind of thing. Did you watch that roll out? Were you paying close attention as the referees explained it?
What do you think?
I thought it was an excellent display of refereeing. The way that he engaged with Haas and talked to him about it, and was understanding but not changing my call. I thought it was just a really good approach. And he didn't talk down to him. It was like peers. It was I'm a referee and you're a player, but there's no difference between us. We're just both here on a court. And
that was brilliant.
I didn't like, because sometimes I find that referees, and in the NBL that we watch,
a bit contrary but controlling.
Yeah, and it's almost like I'm the schoolmaster and I'm going to tell you, Sonny boy, how you should play the game, because I'm the real boss here. There was none of that with this guy. It was just like, hey, we've just each got a job to do.
It was colloquial. I remember the line. In fact, he goes like, "Listen, I see what you're saying, but you turn to make contact like that, that's always going to be a foul." And that rationale, I don't know how you could poke any, because I saw the play and it was a bit 50-50. Haas made a move. He had his hands up. And he goes, "I understand." His exact line was, "I understand you're a big guy, but if you make contact to the face like that, I got to call it."
Yep.
And it's so true. And he did lead with the elbow a wee bit. I don't think it was ever going to go the way of Haas, but at the same time, I like the way they came to the decision, how they explained it. Yeah, that would be another moment where I'd put this thing up and say, every league across the world can really learn from that. Dentman didn't have the game that he did in the first round. Hit a couple of shots, but he had 33 points in the first round and they needed that from him and it didn't happen.
Yeah. Speaking of Dentman, did you see also I'm focusing more on the off-game action here. Probably highlights the quality of the game, right? They mentioned that Dentman, if he won, was going to invest his money in the local rec center that he's building.
Yeah. I did see that.
Now, this, I can't help but get maybe a teensy bit political here, but isn't that the role of government to build rec centres for a community? And perhaps the fact that a professional basketball player is having to get out there and DIY it is an indictment of the problems that the country's potentially facing.
Yeah, I can't debate that at all. I saw it. I thought it was charitable, but then I didn't immediately leap to that conclusion you did, but I certainly thought, that's interesting. I thought maybe you'd, but anyway, interesting. What do you think of that travel call on Dievendorf? You know, when he kind of caught it on a rebound, went to push it forward and kind of put the high dribble over two guys. Did you think that was a travel?
I didn't. I was a bit disappointed to see them call it, but I understand why they did, because it probably technically was. But I like to me, in the immediate moment, it just seemed like one of those efforts to accelerate, and like you say, you do the high dribbling and just push out on it. For them to call it a travel, well, technically maybe, but do we want to see travels?
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was iffy. Again, they didn't show a replay, which made it impossible to kind of look at. Men of Mackey only scored 3 points in the Elam ending. It was a wide open three that was kind of conceded to get the ball back so they could finish this thing up. They were very lucky not to go scoreless in the Elam ending. And I think that was indicative of the team they were. And now the winner of this goes on to play the TBT Cinderella team, Sideline Cancer. So Did you see some? My question to you, Andrew, is did you see something from Boeheim's army that you thought put them in good stead against sideline cancer? Or did you see something from sideline cancer that you think is going to take them through?
No, I think Boeheim, that this is their one victory. I think they're done. Next round, they're gone.
I agree. I think sideline cancer, the number 22, are because Boeheim's army were, I think, ninth ranked, or certainly in the top 10.
Seems generous.
It does seem generous. I think I think things have fallen pretty well for sideline cancer to make the they're in the eight, so now they're going to go through the semifinal top four. Yep. I think that's a pretty good result for them. But then think about that. If Armored Athlete win their game against Overseas Elite, which I'm predicting they will because of no DJ Kennedy, they go through, and I think they'll beat Sideline Cancer. So that puts Armored Athlete in the grand final. It does. So
that's and that's the NBL Pocket Podcasts Armored
that's
Athlete.
The break. That's their very own. That's the breaks of the game. So interesting. Any other notes from this game?
I did have a couple.
Do.
Now, I think it was the 1-3 pointer you mentioned in the Elam ending was hit by Boudreau.
Yeah, Boudreau. Receding is...
Look, I had notes on him that I scribbled out and then rewrote a number of times because he was up and down like a yo-yo this
boy. Oh, boy. He didn't shoot great.
He didn't shoot great. But then every time I was like, I'm out on this guy, he would actually just do something that was kind of nifty.
He had a nice stroke.
But, yeah, look, he's the balding white guy was not repping the demographic well, was he? He was just it was that you sort of wonder why he's on the court. He's surrounded by these athletic dudes, and there's him with his lack of hair. It was
white players jump had shots. Good names, though. They had good names. You had Boudreau, and then you had former Finley or something. I forget now. Something. For McGlynn. There you go. Yeah. No, I did see him out there and was the same of opinion of you. Is he'd hit a shot and you go, oh, okay. And then he'd miss four in a row, and then he'd hit another one. Oh, okay. But no, not on the whole. What was your other note?
Had one other notes. Have you noticed it? This game was guilty of it, but gee, I've seen it a lot. The refs on a charge, they love to do the triple whistle.
Oh, they sell it. No, I didn't notice the triple whistle, but boy, they really kind of get a kick, a leg up. They really brace themselves. They throw their back. There's a twist and push into it. Yeah, big time.
Yep. Yeah. This
Tell me about the triple whistle, though.
So it was a charge. It was late in the game. It was it was just before the Elam. It was a charge. It was apparent. Like, I don't think any player on the court was really disputing the fact.
They were turning the referee on the other way.
The referee, despite that, was like, and like the big, the triple whistle, almost like there was going to be a punch up, and he was going to dive in to separate the players. Gave it the big whistle, and I thought this. The charge call, it's the ref's dunk equivalent, isn't it? It's their one chance.
It's the dunk
to
of the refs. It is the, what's better? The AFL goal scored two hand, like that's a great theater. You watch it, you lean back, and then you step to your mark. Everybody's watching at that point. You know the cameras are on and you do. So my question to you is, what's better, that AFL thing or the charge call?
I'm going to go with the AFL referee on this one. The two fingers saying goal is good because people are interested in the referee at that point. I think the theater of the charge is just a bit overblown. It's a bit like, come on, mate. Yeah, we're all watching you, but get your hand off it.
Good point.
I'm going to go with the AFL on this one.
Yeah, and I also think there is a moment of suspense in the AFL where the step to the mark. You know, they step to the peg in the middle of the goals, and then there is a two beats of just wait, and then it comes out. Whereas the charge call, yeah, you're right. There is the distraction of the actual, clamber down onto the floor. So, yeah, you're very right.
Yeah.
AFL wins hands down. And that's your last note, I believe. So looking at it, day five is tomorrow, two games, no NBL players making their way in this one. Red Scare play Big X. Tate is an option. Like there was talk of him coming back for it. That's not going to happen, surely.
I don't think so. No.
That's
no,
4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. No, he's not coming back. No way. Imagine if he plays. Far out. But he's turned in a bunch of tests. That'd be very interesting. If we get more information on Casper Ware, we'll communicate that. But that game's at 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is what time on the West Coast, Andrew?
Which is 2 a.m.
2 in the morning. Carmen's Crew play House of Pain. This does feature that 2 in the morning. This game does feature a NBL player. Egwu, how do you pronounce his first name?
Nana
Egwu. Carmen's Crew, House of Pain. That's 6 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Take 2 for 4 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast.
Yeah, 4 a.m. in the morning. These are not friendly to me. And I'm looking forward to Carmen's Crew just because there's been so much talk about them. The number one ranked team.
Ah, yeah, they won it last year.
They are, and a lot of talk about them. So I'm interested to see how they actually measure up. We've been waiting a while to see these top of the tree teams.
But then I think we can all agree the day after, I'm an athlete.
That's the one we're waiting for. Elite.
And then even the money team. The other team is the money team. They play whoever they play, I forget. But they've got Jacob Wiley on that team, and I'm excited to see him play, see if he's matured a little bit from when he was with Adelaide 2 years ago.
They got Heard That. They're playing.
Yeah, Heard That. Oh, and that team's fun too. They don't have any NBL talent, but they are a fun team. They've got the brothers Edmore, or the brothers Elmore.
Elmore, yes.
Oit Elmore or something like that. Yeah, very funny player to watch. And are sneaky good.
Yeah. Look, if the shots drop, you're in trouble. You know, it's a make or miss game. And
if they get an early lead, that's the D'Antoni style. Get an early lead, put a bit of a scare in a team, make them play up tempo, which they're not used to, and then maybe you can fumble your way through to the end if the shots drop. So they're both very exciting games. Not yet tomorrow, but the day after. Andrew, any parting thoughts, comments, queries, concerns?
No, other than I will say I'm still intending to buy a book from Booktopia. I've got my list ready. I've got my link. I'm going to make a purchase. I encourage other listeners to do the same.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Once more, follow me and Andrew on Twitter. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And if you're in the business of buying a book, use booktopia.com via the link in the description. Thanks very much, and I'll see you next time.